I have a friend who grew up going to church. And like many around college, she began to drift away. You see, the transaction of her childhood faith no longer added up. She spent some years working and traveling, then was married, had a child. And once that child started asking questions, it's a great gift that children offer us, you know. They're questions, right? It's really important for us to receive them as such, as a gift. It was then that she found herself looking for a church. It was odd in a way, but Louise realized that it was important to her that her child have the support of a community, an ethical grounding. But you can only show up for someone else for so long. At some point, you need to figure out what you own. Right? The current can only take you so far before you need to swim to move. And so after some time, after several years actually, Louise decided to see what remained from what she grew up with, what she was ready to let go of, and, well, she wondered if there was going to be anything left. These questions happened to coincide with the start of Lent, and so she began her search at that time of the year when the church begins that long, slow spiral into the mystery. Along the way, she found other pilgrims, each hoping to come closer to what is real and true, together choosing this path of vulnerability and honesty. Unwilling to settle for surface answers, she inhabited the stories more fully, entered the holy spaces more openly, preparing herself for what could be. In our gospel this morning, the needs of this man from Gerasa were more obvious. Our text tells us that he had been tormented for years, living without clothes or shelter, eventually having to live in the tombs outside the city. This living in the tombs should be a marker, right? This should be a marker for us that says that any connection that he had to his community, the people he grew up with, all that gave him structure and meaning, any connection to this community is now broken. And then one day, Jesus arrives by boat. He steps on the shore, and immediately there is an encounter. Something about Jesus compels the man to fall to his knees, asking, begging for healing. Now say what you will about demons and possession, but here's what follows. The man is healed, restored, and a herd of swine on a nearby hillside stampede off the steep bank and into the lake, drowning in the process. As news traveled, the surrounding countryside was in an uproar. Now, there are many of us here today who, given the same situation, might get upset at this loss of life. Some of us may be upset at the loss of property. But curiously, that's not what seems to get the people of the country of the Gerasenes all riled up. The dramatic plunge of these pigs to their death is not why the crowds ask Jesus to leave. No, all of the people of the surrounding country ask Jesus to leave because we are told they are seized with great fear. Fear, not anger. Fear. But why are they so afraid? They are afraid because those who had seen it told them how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. It was the healing that frightened them. For if God can do this, what might be coming next? And this kind of fear is not unusual when people get close to Jesus. A few weeks ago, we heard about the fear of the townspeople of Nain who saw the widow's son restored to life. Then in the passage just prior to this morning's gospel, as Jesus and the disciples are making their way across the lake to the country of the Gerasenes, a storm sweeps down upon their boat. Now, they may have been scared of the storm, but it's when Jesus rebukes the wind and the waves and they cease, this is when the disciples are struck with fear. Fear not just when the pain or the brokenness descend. No, it's when Jesus enters in real and present ways. This is when people begin to fear. My friend Louise, she made her way through Lent. And when it came to Holy Week, she immersed herself in those days, soaking up every moment, every slowly turning story, every sheer silence. And then she soared into Easter, aware like never before. And then, all of a sudden, it happened to her. It was real. The physical presence of God. It wasn't just something that you read about in memoirs. This was middle of the night, heart-pounding encounter. It was something present, visceral. She talks about it as a physical craving. And then tears and tears and tears, but not tears of sadness. Tears with no explanation or rational reason. It was exhilarating, overwhelming. It was also destabilizing and dangerous, irrational and alarming. You know, this distant creator God, or that master ethicist of Jesus, that's one thing. But something that you feel, that you know to be real and more than you can control, this is frightening and demands a response. Friends, this is why the Gerasenes were seized with great fear. If this is for real, it changes everything. It means that the things that they had been counting on to be solid, stable, stationary, they may not actually be. It may not just be about death and taxes. Right? No one liked living this way, binding this man during his fits, but this was the way that they lived. This is what they knew. And now, they had no idea what might happen. What then? Right? In this past week, I've been wondering about this sense of fear that arises when we are faced with the realness of God. If God has created us in love, then what is it that we fear? Well, to start, I think it's fair to admit that often our fears are legion. Loss of loved ones, those with whom we share this pain and beauty. Loss of who we are, of our identity. Loss of what we know, the structures of our lives. Loss of what might be, the expectations that we build often without thought or intention, but they are there. And then when I am really honest, it is fear of that which is beyond my control. The great unknown. For demons are not alone in their fear of the abyss. It is for this reason that we do our best to order our lives, right? We plan our weeks as summer follows spring, and in this part of the world, that means the fog is rolling until September. We plan our days, knowing what Mondays bring, giving thanks for Tuesdays, and sometimes with desperation looking for Fridays. For all intents and purposes, I treat my life as if it were an ordered sequence, as if the ground under my feet will always be solid, as if the relationships in my life will always be present. Because frankly, to contemplate otherwise can be terrifying. I do suppose at some level I realize that the control I assume is illusory, but I spend much of my time pretending otherwise, treating change in my life as if it were the occasional stranger rather than the resident truth. Our own common life as a parish faces some of its own change as we grow, and what has come with it is its own set of fears. What will it be like when what I have known and loved is no longer the same? What will my Sunday mornings be like with this third service? How will I find my friends? What if we throw a party and nobody comes? Or this question, the one we've been wondering about with this transition team and with the group that's been helping me to restructure my role and with the staff and the vestry. The question is, if what we have right now at All Souls is that proverbial special sauce, if we have this special sauce, what if in this transition we lose the recipe? Right? What if all of this doesn't go as planned? It is out of our control. And I have to say, friends, when faced with this kind of fear, it is tempting to say to Jesus, please go back to where you came from, for we are not ready for you here. My friend Louise is actually in a similar place. So she's had this experience, right? And been confronted. She's been confronted with the realness of all that is. So now what? She is asking, now, what do I do with this? How do I live with this? Often I find our response to moments like this is to take the experience and to carefully place it in a box and to cover the box and throw some packing tape across the top and then go place it high up on a shelf in that back closet, right? Only to be opened once we're ready for it. Which, when we're being honest, will mean, like, never. And then we hear the end of this story in Luke's Gospel. The man who has been tormented, right? That's how he's known. Removed from the family and the friends he's known for years. He is healed and he comes back to Jesus. At this point in the story, it is clear that Jesus is leaving, that he isn't wanted around here anymore. And the man who is known by his former condition, the one from whom the demons had gone, he knows what he's facing. These people who used to track him down and bind him, shackle him to keep him from harming himself, now he may be in his right mind, but they may not be so sure. And so this Gerasene man then kneels at the feet of Jesus, begging Jesus to take him with him and the disciples. Wouldn't you beg? I would. I do. And yet here is where the story takes yet another unexpected turn, because so many other times in situations just like this, Jesus simply says, follow me. Follow me. But not this time. This time, Jesus says, no. The reason? So that this man can return to your home. to your home and declare how much God has done for you, rather than sailing for distant lands or even across the sea to put his life on the line with Jesus, this man is told to go, return to your home, declare what God has done for you. I tell you, though, I find this even more challenging in some ways. This means that I can't leave town, right? I can't find a new spot to make some sense of how my world has just been reordered. It means going back to the people who knew me when, knowing that they may not be ready to see me for who I am now. It means that I have to take that alarming, on the edge of tears experience. I have to take it down up off the shelf. I have to open it back up. And I have to be prepared to spend some time with it. And then, in faith, out of love, respond. Friends, even in our hometowns, even with those who know us well, maybe especially with those who know us well, we are asked to declare what God has done for us. Right? In the midst of the brokenness and the apathy, in the fear of the loss of control. For it just might be that in our words and in our deeds, it just might be that those around us might come to know that this God, like it or not, is for real.